listeners. My name is Taylor McClure, and I am your host for CIDI's Daily News Show. And thank you all for always being my ear and tuning in to Township's Daily News Bits. On this episode of Township's Daily News Bits, I chat with Ananda, Michaela, and Rosemary, three of seven individuals involved in donating a 21.6 hectares, 53.5 acres, of land in Pigeon Hill to the Mount Pinnacle Land Trust. The ecological value of the property was assessed by biologists from Appalachian Corridor, a conservation organization that works with landowners to preserve their land. An application for recognition as a nature reserve for half the area was submitted to the Ministry of Environment and the Fight Against Climate Change in 2021. The remaining 11 hectares are earmarked for regenerative agriculture, permaculture, and small-scale ecological and sustainable livestock farming projects. Recognizing that accessing farmland has become extremely challenging in the region with the increase in prices, this group aims to protect the property from land speculation, conserve the natural environment for future generations, and give access to people of all ages who have small-scale regenerative farming projects but no land on which to carry them out. As development takes off in the region, the project is all about conserving the region's agricultural roots, relationship to nature, with the hopes of inspiring others to do the same. I also had the chance to chat with Danielle, who is the co-founder of the FFMP, who described the project as a historical step for the land trust, about the need this project will fulfill within the community, and her hopes moving forward. Michaela, Rosemary, and Ananda, thank you so much for chatting with CIDI today about this conservation project. I really appreciate all of your time.
Oh, well, thank you.
So we're here today to chat about a donation of land to a land trust known as La Fiducie Foncière du Mont Pinat that took place in December of last year. So from my understanding, you are a group of individuals that signed your land over to the trust for conservation. I was wondering if you could please bring our listeners back to the beginning and how you all came together. From my understanding, you're a group of friends that wanted to kind of distance themselves from the city and get closer to nature. I wasn't sure if either of you wanted to begin discussing that.
Well, Rosemary had the longest connection to the land because she actually was involved with our land before we bought it and came together as a group.
It's true.
There was another group.
There were two other groups, actually. Yes, yes. What happened was that people that all had a similar idea about living on the land, living in community, came together and did it without any formal structures or anything. And then as we went on and grew and new people came, you know, structures formed, and I think it's a little bit more clearer now about what it is and its purpose, but it's basically to give people an opportunity to live on the land and do projects that are land-based.
Yeah, we'll get that and get into that a little bit more. I just want to give more context to people about the situation because there's a long history behind it. So from my understanding, you came to the area around 1987, Ananda? You and a couple of others?
We bought the land in 1987. A group of us had previously been involved in trying to start something in the Valcour area, and that fell apart. But some of us wanted to continue. And the last place where we tried to set up shop was almost 2 hours outside of Montreal. And we wanted to be closer to Montreal. So we came to check out this area.
Rosemary knew that this piece of land was for sale, and we went to see it and fell in love with it. That's how it began with the current group of co-owners.
So now I read over the blog post that you're preparing for Regeneration Canada, Ananda, and it sure seems like the group was extremely passionate about what they wanted to do. Mm-hmm. The land that we are speaking of, from my understanding, was zoned as agriculture, but it had not been farmed in years. So after purchasing the land, the group came together to form a camp called The Land. I was wondering if you would like to speak a little bit more about that and what it involved exactly.
It was mainly a summertime community, like during the time that we, you know, could be outside. We would go there, and we camped. Like when the kids were out of school, we would stay there. We would set up camp and we would have meals and the kids would run around and we grew our gardens and kids were incredibly free and safe and the grown-ups went in and out and, you know, we did our thing. There were like these two societies. There were the adults and the kids society. And it was kind of a little paradise where we would spend all of our summers.
Yeah. And from my understanding, there was a lot of focus on gardening and learning how to garden and, yes, and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a big motivation, was really for us to learn about where our food comes from, mm-hmm, how to grow our own food, how to be more in touch with the cycles of nature. Like when you grow your own food, you eat in season, mm-hmm, you know what it takes. You put up a lot of food for the winter, like you really kind of think about, mm-hmm, that whole annual cycle of food. So it was a lot about that. And, you know, we cut some wood. We cut the wood for our, you know, heating our houses with our wood stoves. And, you know, we did other things the rest of the year, but it was mostly in the summertime that we would spend all of our time, mm-hmm, there and, you know, be really, really close to nature, like just being outside all day long.
Yeah. Would you like to add anything to that, Rosemary?
Oh, that's pretty good. My kids were grown up, but I did have a son that was still around and that was very involved. And he still is in his heart. And I feel so blessed because when I came out here, I was with a group that eventually... Everybody's gone, right? That was in that group. Yeah. But the people that are here feel very committed to the values that were dear to me. So I'm very happy.
Yeah, you're kind of instilling those values in the children at a young age.
Yeah. Also, the thing for me was that the people who were involved have a kind of, but there's a spiritual base there. So that's very important. It isn't just so that we can grow the best turnip you can imagine, but it's for the purpose. I mean, we really are aware of why we're growing the food or what we're doing on the land.
Well, it's like kind of a nature-based spirituality,
yeah,
like our connection to nature, the cycles of nature, just really being able to be in that place where we hold those values, you know, deep respect for nature. And, you know, that's based on having a relationship with nature.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say, working in collaboration with nature rather than against it.
Yes, exactly. Definitely.
Would you like to add anything to that, Michaela?
My big thing was I had a kind of burnout in a job in Montreal, and I wanted to get to something more essential, like growing food. Because up to that point, my food had come from a grocery store and my water from a tap. Amanda's heard this story maybe too many times, but the first year I was very proud of a row of beets that I grew. And I had made a 50-pound bag of beets in 1992. And I went back to Montreal and went to Marché Jean Talon and saw a bag of beets that size for $2. And I actually got depressed at how disconnected I had become from what's actually involved in growing food. And I've been practicing now for 30 years, and it's taken me that long to, you know, it certainly puts a PhD or an MD or lots of education into perspective. You're a beginner after 5-6 years of gardening. Mm-hmm. It's been a path. You connect with the land and yourself at the same time. It's been a very healing journey for me.
And, you know, you're speaking about this experience and what you learned from it and what it's contributed to your lives, which is essentially what kind of led this group to this conservation project. So what about the experience encouraged you and the others involved in the land to donate your land to the conservation organization?
We paid $30,000 in 1987 to buy that piece of land. You know, we see the prices of land escalating, and, you know, all of our, we're all getting older, and all of our kids are all over the place. Some of them are still interested in it. Most of them aren't. And if the land is just a commodity, you know, it's just something like, okay, so, you know, every family has 2 or 3 kids, so all these kids become co-owners and they don't want anything to do. The only thing that they can do is sell it off and split up the money, and it just doesn't make any sense. Like, this land is so much more than money. And, you know, so that $30,000 we spent 30 years ago, we got our money's worth all of these years. And it has a value. You know, it has a value. It's rewilded a lot. It's the mm-hmm. soil has improved. We had big gardens. And that's what's valuable about it. It's not, you know, what it's worth in a monetary way. So we didn't want to end up in a situation where, you know, the kids don't want it and we sell it off and split up the yeah. profits.
And then God knows what would happen to the land after that.
Exactly. Yeah. So our idea was what we wanted to preserve. We wanted to preserve our access. We wanted to preserve access to our kids for those who wanted it.
Yes.
But most of them didn't. So we just want it to go on. You know, we want other people to have what we had, this, you know, this place where you could learn to grow food and you could learn to be close to nature and, you know, have that relationship with nature. And that was like the best way that we could think of to do it was, you know, to assure that there will be some kind of succession in the spirit of what we created. And it's, you know, and to take it out of this market, you know, the speculative market, because, you know, this land is worth more than whatever dollar amount you want to put on it. That's not what it's about.
I mean, for me, it's been the experiences that I've had with people on the land and with myself learning a new relationship with the land that has changed, well, it changed my life. It was something I was looking for and I didn't even know what it was. But I'm really happy I ended up where I have.
Now, why are these types of conservation projects so important for our region of Bromississkwa? Why are they needed here in our area in particular, from your perspectives?
I mean, I think that they're needed everywhere because the cost of land is escalating. And from what I understand about agriculture is, I think, I don't know what the number is, but, you know, 60-70% of the people who are farming now are going to retire in the next 10-20 years, and a lot of their kids don't want to take over the farm. So what is going to happen to all that farmland? Who's going to grow our food? Mm-hmm. And at the same time, there's all these young people that are interested in getting closer to the land. They're interested in growing food, and they can't afford to pay over $1 million for a farm. Now, this is a small, our piece is a small piece. It's not going to provide any solution to the problem of farmland in the future or, you know, ecological ecosystem restoration. But I think that what we're doing, I hope we're going to inspire other people to make them think about doing the same thing, because otherwise, you know, what's going to happen to the land? What's going to happen to farming if it's
and our food security here in the
exactly.
I think we already have inspired, you know, people and people that have gone out over Canada or even to the States, and it's that's the reward to know that it's going on and it's growing.
I think that the scale of agriculture, like, we're very stuck now in a model with big farms and big machinery to do all that work. I feel like with climate change upon us that there is a value in maintaining and even developing small-scale agriculture to be able to mitigate. Like, you're pretty much at the mercy of weather when you have a 50-acre field of corn. And that's not even a huge field, but it's the size of our whole property. You know, if you're out of rain, you can't go out there with your hose all that well. And then if there's a lot of water, you drain the field. But if then you have a dry year, there's no reserve because you drain. Water flows downhill, but animals can go uphill. There's a place to mitigate landscape challenges and climate change that I think it's useful to have people on the land. Yeah, I think there's a place for a revival of the smaller scale and
sustainable farms that coexist with natural ecosystems rather than the model of farming where you just cut everything down and grow a whole lot of monocultures.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really important to have a different kind of agriculture where you have like little, I mean, like the indigenous people did it. You know, they didn't cut down all the forest to grow their corn. They would make one little section and then rotate that. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really important, which is why we've also, in our users agreement, we've written certain convention that dictates what kind of farming. It isn't just any old farming. It's got to be regenerative organic farming.
That's actually a great leeway into my next question, because I was going to ask, now that things are official, what does this mean for the piece of land exactly moving forward? What do you hope will take place on this land?
Well, there is a certain amount of arable land. There's some forest, you know, there's, you know, a little bit of maple trees, and we've planted some nut trees and different things like that. So there could be multi-small projects. I mean, it depends. We're open to what comes along. Like, if somebody comes along with a particular idea or project, we're happy to collaborate and consider it. We'll see what we open up to. But it could either be one big project, or it could be a whole bunch of small projects, or people like us that don't necessarily want a big commercial operation. They just want some small side thing. It could be something like that.
Yeah.
We're really open to whatever comes. I mean, we have one project that's starting up this weekend. We have a group of African refugees that are going to take over a section of our garden to grow some squash and corn.
That's amazing.
And then we'll see if something grows out of that. We don't know, but
So it just really, it's about making the land accessible to these individuals that want to carry out these types of projects here and making it happen.
Yeah,
and it's not a huge piece of land, so it's not going to be a gigantic project in any way, but
at least it gives them the opportunity to do what they have in their heart to do.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Yeah. And it for me gives hope.
And like you said, encouraging others to hopefully do the same.
That's right.
And there's other projects that can be beside, like beekeeping, and there's other little projects that go very well with.
You mentioned maple trees. Could be a little maple syrup.
Yeah, we've made maple operation. There could be like some, you know, even in a place where there's some trees, like we've got some fruit and nut trees, but there could be grazing animals underneath. Mm-hmm.
Such amazing opportunities for people around here who love farming, or whose family comes from a farming background, but they didn't have the opportunity to keep that farm in the family, like you said, due to financial resources. It really just, even if it's not something that they want to do for a living, at least it allows them to do what they're passionate about.
Yeah, just like we did, just keep up a connection to the land, learn about the cycles of nature, and, you know, just get out from in front of your computer and do something else.
From my understanding, there's also some wetlands near the land as well that will be protected too.
Yeah. Well, when we had the evaluation of the ecological assets, we found out that the back third of our land, which is a wooded area, is actually a wetland. We had never done anything with it. We did notice it was kind of marshy. So we've applied for that to be protected as a sanctuary, a protected wetland. So that's part of our agreement, is there will be no activities taking place in that section of the land.
There have been rare birds identified that can really use the protection. So
yes, that's what I read. There are some species in there, threatened species in there that were living in that protected wetland.
It's also to model that land is not just for exploitation or blah blah all that. That land and having a relationship with the land is a unique, valuable, life-changing experience.
Yeah,
which it was for me, because I was a city person from New York, and the thing I had done philodendrons, you know, that was as far as I'd gone, and so for me it changed my life really.
And I picked up on it. It really stuck with me. There was a sentence in your blog that you were writing, and it was something to do with instilling human values, not materialistic values, in our community. I wasn't sure if you wanted to highlight that a little bit more and what you meant by that.
Well, I think that's something that we all felt when we all started this. Our kids were young, and we were thinking about you know, what kind of values are we going to pass on to our kids? What's really important? And feeling like the culture that we lived in was becoming more and more sort of extractive and materialistic. And, you know, that's not what we wanted to teach our kids. We wanted something that was based on cooperation, that was based on
community.
Community and also, you know, community with nature, not just with each other, but, you know, with the natural world. Because our lives depend on the natural world, the, you know, climate regulation, the clean air, fertile soils are all really connected to the ecological cycles of nature. And, you know, we're forgetting that. Our whole culture is really based on, you know, extraction. What can we take from the land to do all the things that we want to do rather than be in relationship to it and be responsive to it and understand, you know, what, why we need it and what it gives us and coexist on this earth with our fellow creatures as well as with each other.
Yeah, rather than continuing to get rid of nature and tearing it down, like you said, working with it to do what we want to do, but to also allow it to continue to thrive at the same time.
As if our lives depend on it, which they
do.
Yeah, like you said, water, air, we need it to breathe, we need it to live, and if we keep tearing it down, what are we going to have left to continue?
Yeah. Yeah.
But those are the questions that I had for you all. I really appreciate this conversation. I really, really enjoyed it, but I wasn't sure if there was anything else that either of you would like to mention that I may not have touched on in my questions that you would like to bring up.
I mentioned it a little bit in the blog I was writing. I think there is a movement for conservation and including that concept of agriculture as part of conservation, because there's so many places all around the world where the idea of conservation means excluding people.
Yeah, like not being touched.
Yeah, yeah, like leave it alone. Just carve out this little slice and we won't touch it, and that's what conservation is.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, there's just too many people. Like if conservation and people can't live together, then, you know, this isn't going to work. This really isn't going to work because there's too many people. But I think that the indigenous people showed us that there is a way to live sustainably, to have that deep relationship with the land and still meet our needs. And I think that's what we need to recreate. Mm-hmm. And conservation needs to be more than carving out places where people don't go, but it's really showing us that people can live with the land. And there are models of conservation. There's some really big ones that I know about in the States where, you know, land trusts are buying up large swaths of land and then making it accessible to people to manage. And then they have a constitution like we do about how the land needs to be managed and what you can do and what you shouldn't do. And
yeah, like responsible practices on the land.
Exactly. And sometimes it's specific to each piece of land. Like
yes,
in our
course.
Land, you know, this part can be used for agriculture. And, you know, this part we're not going to touch because it's a wetland. So it really, it is about building, you know, for all of society, a model of how we can live with nature in a respectful way and get what we need, but, you know, in give nature what nature needs to.
Yeah, get what we need, but in a responsible way.
Respecting it.
Was there anything you'd like to add, Michaela?
In French, we say autonomie solidaire. And I think that this model of agriculture helps you to appreciate people who do farm on whatever scale. Because right now, I went to a workshop some years ago, but they said we imported 55% of our food in Quebec. And I think we're out of touch, just like I was out of touch with my Rolf Beetz, what was involved in growing food. Like, we're disconnected. And I think for me, it's a hope for the future that we make the reconnection. My wish would be that everyone would grow something.
Yeah.
And like, get your tomato plant, get some tomatoes, and then realize, oh my goodness, I like to eat every day. And that we begin to value and start thinking about how we're going to preserve meeting this basic need for everyone. Because
I think COVID provided a great example as to what can happen when we depend on exporting our food rather than focusing on being sustainable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to spread it everywhere.
Yeah.
Because you can't have a little island of people who have plenty to eat and have others who are hearing their children cry of hunger at night. you know, or the fabric of our society will fall apart. So for me, it's a hopeful step for creating the way of a future that looks to sharing, having food for everybody, and it's actually warms your heart. It's fun to do.
You also have that experience of being a part of the larger creative process in our world. Mm-hmm. And you realize that it isn't separate from you and you're not separate from it. I think that's, to me, that's one of the most important things that happened.
Shift from the development we're seeing back to, exactly. Yeah, our preserving our roots here in the region. Yes. Well, thank you all so much for chatting with me. I really appreciate your time.
Well, thank you for your interest in it.
Danielle, I wanted to thank you so much for taking some time out of your day today to speak about this wonderful conservation project. I really appreciate your time.
Well, it's a pleasure for me to speak about it.
So Danielle, you, from my understanding, you are the co-founder of FFMP, and you described this conservation project to me as a historical step for the organization. I wanted to ask you, what about this project is so significant for the group?
When we founded the Land Trust in 1991, we already had the ambition of not only conserving land in their state, in their natural state, but also to favor the pursuit of agricultural and forestry activities. You know, it was not just the conservation, it was also the perpetuation of a way of life.
You're mentioning the preservation of a lifestyle here in the region, and that is actually a major concern here for people, is preserving our agricultural roots here in Brome.
Yeah, exactly, especially that with speculation, land speculation, and the prices of land is just impossible. A lot of people cannot even buy the farm that belonged to their own parents because it's unbelievable the price of land in the area.
Yes. So from your perspective, why are these types of projects so significant for the Brome-Missisquoi region?
Well, it's significant because of that, because it takes the land out of speculation, and it gives access to someone who would have a project to do it on.
Making it more accessible for people.
Exactly. Exactly. That's why. That's why I think it's very significant. I mean, there is a lot of people expressing themselves, the difficulty to access land in the area. And
yes.
It's one of the things we can do
to
give people access. Yeah.
And what was the role of the FFMP in this project? And what will be the role of the organization moving forward?
Well, our role was to, first of all, when we were approached by the group who wanted to preserve their land or do something with their land, first of all, we asked our partners of Corridor Appalachie to assess the ecological value of the land and all that. And it was done. It was really interesting because it confirmed that it has a lot of, it was a precious ecosystem, but also half of the land was suitable to agricultural project, and it was the desire of the group who were ready to donate it to that it be continued. So we were very happy. I mean, legally we can buy that land and give it a vocation for agriculture forever.
Oh wow. So now it's conserved as that forever.
Yeah, well, half of it is for conservation, if you want. The back of the land and the front of the land is conserved forever for agricultural projects, yeah.
That's great. That's great news for all those farmers out there, like you said, that want to do these projects but don't have a space to do them.
Exactly. And for the future, our role of the Land Trust is really to be sure that it will be used in the way that it was intended to. I mean, we are protecting the desire, the common desire of the donators and our desire.
Yes, so you're just making sure that the land stays exactly as it is. You're the stewards of the land.
Exactly, we're the stewards of the land. That's the way to say it. Yeah.
Well, those are all the questions that I had for you, Danielle, but I wasn't sure if there was anything else you wanted to mention that might be important to bring up to the community.
I think it might inspire other people, and I think it's an interesting new tool that people have to to be able to conduct some, to have access to land, really.
Yes, and to care and to carry out their passion.
Yeah, and to have the management, the collective management is interesting too. It's an interesting challenge. Mm-hmm. And I think in our day, at the moment, with the climatic change and the ecological crisis we're living, I think it's very important to explore new ways of getting together and managing our planet.
Yes, and managing how we, our relationship with the land.
That's it, exactly.
Well, thank you so much, Danielle, for your comments. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much for your interest.
Township's Daily News Bits is a program sponsored by Local Journalism Initiative.